Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. Last Friday was April 1st, also known as April Fool's Day. So for those of you who had trouble figuring out, so when I said it was our last show and that I was moving on to become a stay-at-home full-time bulldog dad, you should have been a little bit of a hint. If you follow us, you know that I would last about 4 hours at home. Now, we all love Miss Winnie, the bulldog. We do. We love her dearly, but couldn't make it a full-time job. And that's the 4 hours. That's about as long as I lasted during all of the shutdowns as well. So yeah, I don't do not working. Okay. It just doesn't work. I've had a paper route at the age of 12 and have never gone more than a week being employed to today's date. So I just couldn't do it. So it was a joke. April Fools. All right. So here we are. We're not going anywhere. There's too much to talk about when it comes to true crime. So let's get right to the docket. First, missing Florida mother, Cassie Carley, found deceased in Alabama. Second, an example of why you should be very, very cautious if you are out there dating, particularly on dating apps. An example of how you lose your law license. This is how to lose your law license on steroids. Let's play confession or false confession, and then finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Wait till you hear about this guy. Let's talk about it. Before we open the record, you know the drill. Please subscribe if you have not done so already. Hit the little bell to receive notifications when we put up new content or go live. And leave me a comment below about what we talk about today. So now, let's open the record for April 4th, 2022. First, Marcus Spanavello, the ex-boyfriend of missing Florida mother Cassie Carley, whose body was found buried in a shallow grave in Alabama over the weekend, has been arrested. Now, Spanavello allegedly sent text messages to the woman's family members after her disappearance roughly a week ago, claiming that she had asked him to drop her off in the middle of nowhere. Well, this is where the story fell apart. Spanavello allegedly told Andrew Carley, the father of Cassie, that Cassie had asked him to drop her off in the middle of nowhere in Destin so that she could stay with a friend formerly known as Stacy. Well, Andrew replied that the woman that he was referring to now goes by the name of Sam and moved to Alabama a while ago and basically also said Cassie would never have you just drop her off anywhere. Well, unfortunately, the officers located and recovered the remains of the 37-year-old Cassie Saturday night in a barn in Spring Hill, Alabama, located some 300 miles away from Navarrete Beach in Florida, where she was last seen alive. Now, Marcus Spanavello is the father of the couple's 4-year-old daughter, Sailor. Now, Spanavello was arrested in Tennessee on Sunday on charges of evidence tampering and providing false information. The sheriff refused to say how they learned that Carley had been buried at that particular barn, but added that the barn had a peripheral connection to Spanavello. Now, Spanavello is currently pending extradition. Carley had been identified thanks to a tattoo that they were able to take a look at and identify her remains. Now, apparently the two allegedly had a somewhat turbulent relationship after their split. Carley had obtained a court order compelling her ex-boyfriend to pay some $6,000 in rear child support. Now, the day Carley went missing, she had arranged to meet up with Spanavello to exchange custody of their daughter around 7 p.m. in the parking lot of Juanita's Grill at Navarrete Beach. Carley's car was located days later in Navarrete with her purse inside, raising concerns, obviously, for her well-being. Police also noted that there had been no activity whatsoever on her phone or any credit cards since the time that she had met with Mr. Spanavello. And according to Carley's father, Carley's last words to him were, "I'll be right back." Sad, sad story, ladies and gentlemen. You just, how do you predict? You just don't know. Well, there's a couple things you can do, I guess. Let's talk about dating malpractice. And okay, we're not trying to victim shame or anything along those lines, but there are a lot of bad people out there, ladies and gentlemen. You have to use precaution, all right? Why? Because we have another dating app tragedy that could have possibly been prevented. Now, Donyell Drayton has been arrested in California, where he fled after the alleged July 2018 death of 29-year-old Samantha Stewart. Now, at the time, Drayton had been released on bail after being charged in Nassau County with assaulting his girlfriend. Now, a prosecutor mistakenly told a New York judge that he didn't have any criminal history, and therefore he was released. Well, it turns out that Mr. Drayton had a criminal record dating back to at least 2011 that included multiple charges of assaulting women. What do they say? Past performance is indicative of future results. 2 weeks after his release, Drayton met up with Samantha. The two went on a date on July 16th of 2018, then went to her home in Queens. Sometime later that day, the defendant allegedly beat and strangled the 29-year-old nurse and then engaged in sexual conduct with the dead body. Now, the alleged homicide is obviously terrible enough, but necrophilia is just wrong at so many levels. Well, guess what? The following day, Samantha's brother goes to her apartment, finds her body wrapped in a blanket on the floor in the corner of her bedroom. It's also further alleged that Mr. Drayton grabbed Stewart's credit cards and fled, using one of the credit cards to buy a plane ticket to California, where he was arrested back on July 24th. Now, the district attorney said that this was a brutal crime that makes every person using a dating app fearful. So it's not just Scott telling people, right? The district attorney further said the victim was duped into going out on a date with the defendant, who played a charmer online but was in actuality an alleged sexual predator. Now, Drayton has been held in California on sexual misconduct charges since his arrest back in 2018, but a Queens County grand jury recently indicted him on charges of murder, grand larceny, petite larceny, sexual misconduct, identity theft, unlawful possession of personal identification information, and criminal possession of stolen property, which he will now be extradited back to New York. He was held without bail and is due back in court sometime on May 23rd. He faces 25 years to life in prison if he's convicted. Now, obviously, we'll give Mr. Drayton the presumption of innocence, but let's face it, it's not looking so good for him. But this case shows that anyone who is dating, okay, whether you're using a dating app or not, you need to go to crimetalksearch.com and do a full background check. Now, prior arrests for assaulting women, that's kind of a red flag, just saying. And when you sign up for crimetalksearch.com, you can do a background search on as many people as you need to search, and you can cancel the subscription at any time. And if Mr. Wonderful has a history of abusing women, children, run. Run like a hotel fire, ladies and gentlemen. Don't try to fix him. Don't say he's misunderstood. Run. Past performance is indicative of future results. All right, next on the docket, an example of how to lose your law license. Now, I remember as a young lawyer hopeful many, many, many years ago, you study for the bar exam and you also study for the ethics portion of the exam. And when you study for the ethics portion of the exam, there's a couple of general rules that come about. And those general themes are: one, don't sleep with your client. Bad, bad thing. Two, communicate with your client by keeping them informed about their case, sending them copies of things going on, communicating things like that, keeping them informed, right? And don't steal the client's money. Those are obviously some bad things. And I guess that it was so obvious that they didn't need further explaining. But another rule that's kind of unwritten but pretty clear out there is don't help your client kill their ex-girlfriend and her parents. That's right. So this woman, Keegan Kelly Haraz, must have missed that day of ethics class. And I have always lived by the motto and told all of the attorneys that have ever worked for me that we have never met a client worth going to jail for, and you've never been paid enough money to jeopardize your law license. Very, very good advice. Okay. So Keegan Kelly Haraz, she's 38, and she had a client by the name of Barry Roland, Titus II. He's 40. Well, the two now face three counts of deliberate and intentional first-degree murder and one count of first-degree burglary. Things get a little weird here. So a relative finds Titus's ex-girlfriend, Tiffany Eicher, and her parents, Jack and Evelyn Chandler, deceased back in September of 2019. The cause and manner of death was homicide by firearm. All right. Surveillance video showed two masked people arrive at the house early in the morning of September 7th in a vehicle matching the make and model of the one owned by Haraz. The video stopped just after 3 a.m. when the intruders allegedly cut power to the house. Now, near where the vehicle was parked, detectives found a baseball cap containing spent shell casings matching the two weapons used in the murders, as well as Mr. Titus's DNA. The district attorney has made the decision regarding the death penalty, and that is coming from aggravating factors that the prosecutors say warrant the ultimate punishment, the death penalty, for both Haraz and Titus. Now, the aggravating factors that they mentioned for Ms. Haraz are that she created a great risk of death to more than one person. Specifically, the killing of Iker and Evelyn Chandler were especially heinous, that the Chandler's massacre was to eliminate witnesses in Iker's death, and that Haraz has a history of violence and would, in all likelihood, commit more crimes in the future. The alleged aggravating factors that are necessary for the death penalty, as they relate for Mr. Titus, are very similar, stating that by killing Iker, he hoped to avoid prosecution for domestic abuse, assault and battery, strangulation and kidnapping, and the case that Haraz had been defending Mr. Titus in court. Crazy facts, right? Well, the prosecutors further alleged that this was an especially heinous killing of Ms. Iker because it involved serious physical abuse, torture, and pain, and it is alleged that Evelyn Chandler hid in the closet while Haraz and Titus killed Iker and her husband. Now, Haraz and Titus were charged with the killings back in April of 2021 while already serving a federal prison sentence for weapons charges related to the murders. And obviously, Ms. Haraz's law license was suspended after her guilty plea on the weapons charge. Bottom line is, ladies and gentlemen, you can't commit a crime as an attorney. My God, let alone go assist them with it. What Ms. Haraz was thinking, I think, goes back to the rule number one that they taught you in ethics class. Don't sleep with the clients. Just going on a limb there. We'll see. Next on the docket, false confession or real confession? Let me know. So during hours of questioning by police, Melissa Lucio denied more than 100 times that she had fatally beat her 2-year-old daughter to death. And now her lawyers are arguing that Melissa Lucio was worn down from a lifetime of abuse and the grief of losing her daughter, Mariah. Police also believe that she did not mean what she told the police. And what she told the police was, "I guess I did it," when she responded to questions asked if she was responsible for some of Mariah's injuries. Her lawyers say prosecutors wrongfully interpreted that statement, and the jury as well, apparently, as a murder confession, tainting the rest of the investigation into Mariah's 2007 death, with evidence gathered only to prove the conclusion and helping lead to a capital murder conviction. Now, Melissa's attorneys believe that Mariah died from injuries from a fall down the 14 steps of a steep staircase outside the family apartment in the South Texas city of Harlingen. Now, Melissa has an April 27th execution date. Her attorneys believe new evidence, along with growing public support, including support from jurors who now doubt the conviction, and from more than half of the Texas House of Representatives, will persuade the state's Board of Pardons and Parole, as well as Governor Greg Abbott, to grant an execution reprieve or commute her sentence. Now, Melissa Lucio's lawyers say jurors were not presented with forensic evidence that would have explained that Mariah's various injuries were actually caused by a fall days earlier. They also say Lucio wasn't allowed to present evidence questioning the validity of her confession. Now, the Texas Attorney General's office maintains evidence that shows Mariah suffered the absolute worst case of child abuse her emergency room doctor had seen in 30 years. Now, Lucio still advances no reliable and no supporting evidence of her acquittal. That's what the Attorney General's office wrote in their pleadings last month. Now, Ms. Lucio, who is now 53, would be the first woman executed since 2014. And just by way of information, only 17 women have been executed in the U.S. since the Supreme Court lifted its ban on the death penalty back in 1976. most recently in January of 2021. Now, in the clemency position, Lucio's lawyers say that she was a loving mother while she had used drugs, which led her to lose custody of her children temporarily. She worked to remain drug-free and provide for her family. It's also provided in their pleadings that Lucio had 14 children and was pregnant with the youngest two when Mariah died. The clemency petition further argues that Lucio and her children struggled through poverty. At times, they were homeless and relied on food banks for meals, according to the petition. And the Child Protective Services was present in the family's life throughout most of this time, but there was never an accusation of abuse by any of the children. Now, Lucio has been allegedly sexually assaulted multiple times, starting back as young as the age of six, and has been physically and emotionally abused by two of her husbands. The lawyers say this lifetime trauma made her susceptible to giving a false confession. Now, the attorneys also argued that Lucio's sentence was disproportionate to what her husband and Mariah's father, Robert Alvarez, received. He received a four-year sentence for causing injury to a child by omission, even though he was the one responsible for Mariah's care at the time. Now, back in 2019, a three-judge panel of the Fifth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals overturned Lucio's conviction, ruling that she was deprived of her constitutional right to present a meaningful defense. However, when the full court did what they referred to as en banc in 2021, they said that the conviction had to be upheld for procedural reasons, despite the difficult issue of the exclusion of testimony that might have cast doubt on Lucio's credibility as it relates to the confession. Three jurors and one alternate in Lucio's trial have signed affidavits expressing doubt regarding her conviction. Now, Texas Governor Abbott can grant a one-time 30-day reprieve. He can grant clemency if a majority of the parole board recommends it. And the board plans to vote on Lucio's clemency position 2 days before the scheduled execution. Let me know what you think. Clemency or no clemency for Melissa Lucio? This is a great example of why you don't talk to the police. I've had situations where a client said, I will say that I did it, but that won't be the truth. And before a lot of videos were produced, when it came to recording confessions, guess what the police actually put in the interview? That's right, that he said that I did it, left out the part that wouldn't be true until we got to court. So it happens, ladies and gentlemen. That's why these things need to be recorded at every juncture. Let me know. Would have been a lot easier had she not said something. And it also shows why it is so important to get excellent legal representation, particularly in a capital case, up front and early. All right, next on the docket, our dumb criminal of the day. Now, let's face it. You know that you're in the running to be the contestant for the most coveted prize on the internet. And that is the Dumb Criminal of the Day, awarded by Crime Talk, right? And how do you know that one is coming? When the sheriff says, this guy's obviously isn't the sharpest tool in the shed. What did he do? He gets into a high-speed wreck, collides with a law enforcement vehicle, and then flees. And thankfully, he was just dumb enough to leave his license plate behind. Please meet Brandon Ingram. Sir, you have arrived. This may be the pinnacle of your life. Contestant for the Dumb Criminal of the Day. Mr. Ingram faces charges that include reckless driving, damage to personal property, and racing on a highway. Now, deputies arrested Mr. Ingram after he left his license plate at the scene of a hit-and-run crash with a police cruiser. And it is alleged that before midnight, the sheriff deputy saw the two cars racing north on U.S. Highway 1 at about 110 miles per hour. Moments later, one of the drivers lost control of his Nissan 350Z, spinning out and crashing into the deputy's SUV that was parked in the median. Now, the crash's impact caused the airbags on the patrol car's SUV to deploy. The driver of the Nissan drove away from the crash scene, leaving the bumper and the license plate behind. Well, the deputies tracked down the driver and arrived at his residence just before Brandon arrived. Do you think the deputies were saying, let's go, Brandon. Let's go, Brandon. Brandon, are you the winner today because you were drag racing at night on the highway? No. Who hasn't done it? Were you the dumb criminal for leaving your license plate at the accident scene where you hit the sheriff's car? Hey, these things happen. You are the winner because you went home right after the accident. For that, sir, you are the dumb criminal. I want to ditto the sheriff's remarks, Brandon. You are not the sharpest tool in the shed. All right, let's close the record on the docket for April 4th, 2022. Thanks for watching. Remember to like, share, and leave a comment, and subscribe if you haven't done so. We'll see you next time. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great day.